It is about 27 minutes after the hour of 5 o'clock here at the Roadhouse on the Shore. And joining us on the phone from his office down in Duluth is Bill Mittelfeld with the Northeast Minnesota Clean Energy Resource Team. Bill, thanks so much for joining us. I'm glad that after our misconnect last week that we were able to get together this Friday.
Well, thank you very much, Bob, for the opportunity, and thanks for giving me a second chance.
We believe in second chances here on the Roadhouse, so no problem there. I'm sorry that you aren't able to be up at your cabin this weekend, but do you get a chance to get up quite a bit?
Not enough.
Yeah,
I love the woods as much as you do, I think, Bob.
Yeah.
So you can't get enough of that. But we did have a lot of fun with the grand boys.
Oh, good, good. Now, I want to, for those listeners that are not quite clear, and Buck and I were talking about this earlier, there are, as I understand it, five regions that have clean energy resource teams around the state. Basically, what is the function of a CERT?
Well, CERT stands for Clean Energy Resource Teams, and actually there are seven of them in seven different regions. I'm the coordinator for the northeast part of Minnesota, so I'm delighted to serve the people of Cook County and your listenership. So we are located throughout the state, and we have a statewide mission, and that is to reduce the use of fossil fuels as much as possible by improving efficiency and turning on local energies where feasible. And CERT was started by the Minnesota Department of Commerce in 2003. And at that time, we were a staff of two. And now I think there are probably seven people on the staff in the St. Paul office, and there are seven of us who are regional coordinators throughout the state.
And do you maintain an office in Duluth? I mean, are you it as far as the clean energy resource team is in northeastern Minnesota?
Yes, I guess you could say I'm it. I have a very nice office at UMD. I'm considered a staffer at the university here, but I just returned this afternoon from an exciting meeting on the Iron Range, and so I'm out and about a lot. I'm actually out a lot much more than I'm in.
I would think that's true. One of the things that I read said that one of the things that the clean energy resource teams do is to work to foster achievable sustainable development, focusing on natural resources, renewable energy, sustainable agriculture, regional food systems, and sustainable tourism. That's a lot to do for any organization, much less one guy.
Right, Bob. I don't want to overstate the case. I'm a one-man outfit in this region, but I have an extremely capable set of partners, and so every CERT's region has a board of advisors who help us with technical problems, regional problems, business problems, school problems, and it's really a statewide partnership. And so, you know, I'm on a time budget here, so I can't go into much detail.
Oh, sure.
But we have a number of programs that utilize that statewide talent pool to solve local problems. But the key part of our CERT's mission is we go into communities like Grand Marais and look for the people who are wanting to change the direction of their community in terms of their energy profile in particular. And so that's how I met and began working with CCLEP.
Mm-hmm.
I've done some work with the North House Folk School, too, and some work with the co-op, the food co-op. And so Grand Marais and the Cook County area is just so full of talented and committed people who are passionate about improving the community's resilience as we face a number of crises that are all linked together. That's my strategy. I don't go into any area and start an argument. I start looking for allies.
You know? Now, you said you will go to communities that want to change their energy
profile.
What does that mean?
I'm glad you asked. I can overwhelm you with data, but let me just be brief. If you looked at Minnesota's energy profile, that is all the energy we use today, 40% of it was oil. This is more or less 40% oil. It's 23% natural gas. I think there's no natural gas in Cook County.
Right.
22% coal, 8% nuclear. That's from the three operating nuclear plants that are run by Xcel. And the 7% that remains are the renewable local energies that are becoming more and more feasible and cost-effective. And that's what CCLEP is trying to do. That's one of their missions, is to tap those. I know they have a wind team, they have a solar team, they have an efficiency team. And I'm just very delighted to work with them. It's just been a fabulous journey the last couple of years because they're pulling talent together every year. And it's just a fun group to work with. But in case you thought this was optional, the biggest portion is oil, and that's 40% of Minnesota's profile. There are no oil wells in Minnesota, I repeat, zero wells.
What a shock.
Yeah, and the second piece of our pie is natural gas. There's no natural gas in Minnesota, and there's not even a coal mine in Minnesota, yet we are importing roughly 93% of our energy resources. If we're importing 93%, that means we must be exporting a heck of a lot of cash.
Mm-hmm.
And today
mm-hmm.
I would estimate that would exceed $20 billion a year. And we can't afford that, especially if oil is going to explode in price related to peak oil, which we don't know if we're past peak oil or coming to peak oil, but it's just not going to be good for any organization's budget. So the smart people, like the CCLEP and a number of the partners in Cook County, are starting to make alternative plans.
And I want to remind our listeners, we're visiting with Bill Mittelfeldt, who is the head of the Northeast Minnesota Clean Energy Resource Team. When you go into a community, do you go in... I'm guessing at somebody's invitation,
like the people
that put together CCLEP. And so what do other kinds, like with CCLEP, and we've heard a lot about it here, it's been in the paper, on the radio, but I'm sure there's still people that don't know, or in other communities, what do those plans look like? I mean, it's kind of one thing for an individual to be sitting there saying, you know, we need to be thinking about this energy deal because we're spending way too much on, you know, bringing stuff in. But to translate that into a project or action, how does that happen?
Well, it's my recollection is that George Wilkes, Buck, and I think Lonnie were standing around a very slow ice hole doing some fishing, and all of a sudden one of them had an idea. I think there's rumors about who had the idea, but all of a sudden they said, you know, we can't sustain our energy profile because we're at the end of the pipeline, literally. And lo and behold, that ice conversation, I guess the fish were part of the problem or solution, produced this organization that has just been very vital and continues to grow. So I guess this is their third year, and they've attracted some grant money and a huge amount of civic talent. So they have, as I understand, five committees on the ground.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's like efficiencies one, transportation, biomass, solar, and wind. I think those are them. And they had to have the five committees because there was so much interest and participation. And for my region, that's nine counties. That's probably an all-time high for the region.
Well, now talk a little bit about that, Bill. What other communities are involved, and what kinds of things are they working on?
Oh, good question. Well, I would say there's probably at least 12 communities active all the way down to Pine City. And as you were saying, Bob, that each community is going to iterate or learn at its own rate, depending on the catalytic agents that are, you know, present in the equation.
Uh-huh.
So we have everything from small commitments and, you know, tentative gestures towards increasing the efficiency of public buildings we have solar arrays put on schools, especially elementary schools, to have displays show the kids the data that there are local energies, and they're becoming more and more cost effective. We have some significant business partners. We call them our energy entrepreneurs. And they are actually bringing new businesses, for example, solar manufacturing, to the Iron Range. And Silicone Energy is going to open a plant this spring that's going to manufacture solar panels in Minnesota. And the discounts and rebates that those are going to qualify are going to make them extremely competitive.
Huh.
And so it's possible that you and your friends will be buying solar panels made in Minnesota, and that'll qualify you for some excellent discounts, and that'll bring the payback up to something unbelievably short.
Sure, sure.
Keep in mind, I don't know if we're at peak oil or post-peak oil, but if we're expecting trouble, for example, the U.S. imports 2% of its oil from Libya. I believe we're probably bombing Libya as we speak.
Mm-hmm.
This could be a problem for the future of oil.
Well,
and therefore, the smart people are making other arrangements about is solar feasible, biomass feasible, geothermal, or wind?
Mm-hmm. Well, and I think if you look at the instability in history in the Middle East, and this is no, you know, this isn't shocking. We've been looking at this for a long time. If you look at the potential for problems such as the British Petroleum catastrophe that happened down in the Gulf, it's pretty obvious that, you know, we're dealing with a less than stable supply environment. But the one question I wanted to ask was, how does it, how, and I'm sure it does, how does it relate, and how can you relate it to, for instance, what happened in Japan with the tsunami and the nuclear thing? What, tie that to the advantage of local energy.
Oh, that's a super question, Bob. You know, Japan, I think, got 30% of their national energy from nuclear. I believe they have 11 nuclear plants running in the country. The U.S. has 104. Many of them are the Mark I edition manufactured by GE. And as soon as that happened, both GE and the U.S. Government Nuclear Regulatory Commission started, you know, looking through their notes about when was the last time we had safety and security checks at the, you know, U.S. installations. So I think it's going to lead to a quick review of the safety and reliability of the U.S. nuclear industry. There's kind of a mixed story on that. I think so far in Minnesota, our three plants have been run very well by Xcel. There have been some glitches here and there, but basically what's happened is that they've become so expensive in their manufacturing, partly due to the safety concerns, that I think the fallout, literally, sorry, no humor at all in the tragedy, the fallout from this nuclear tragedy in Japan is going to end nuclear construction for at least a generation in the world, partly because we're going to all watch it, and I don't know if you heard yesterday, but now the water in Tokyo, which is, what, 160 miles away, is now starting to show twice the level of recommended contamination. So it's just going to be a big, long, tragic story, and we're going to learn from that that this was probably not a good idea to put nuclear plants that close to a seismically active part of the ocean.
Sure.
Anyway, that's going to reflect on the U.S. energy oil energy profile, especially oil. If we have 40% oil, 23% gas, 22% coal, and 8% nuclear, I'm pretty dang sure that we're not going to grow that 8% nuclear. So it's going to put the pressure on the others, especially if oil prices start exploding. The others could be Minnesota resources. We call them local and efficient, and that is biomass, which we grow in our forests and in our ag community. Wind, which there are a number of communities that have more potential wind than they're utilizing, and Dr. Mike Mayhew at the University of Minnesota has been up to Cook County a number of times, and he's been delighted at what he's found in terms of harvestable energy, wind energy up there. The hydro sites where there is what's called head, which is a level of water dropping annually, those have pretty much been harvested, so we don't think there's going to be a significant increase in hydro. But solar also. I was at our annual conference in St. Cloud last month, and let me tell you, there's a remarkable explosion of technology in the solar domain. The solar collectors you and I could buy today off the shelf are roughly 17% efficient at converting photons into flowing electrons for our apparatus. Some of the new stuff rolling out is going to be closer to 20 or 25, and that just really shortens the payback. And when you understand that, I can list three recent Minnesota businesses who are doing really well, partly thanks to the Japanese tragedy, but Silicone Energy is just going to open their plant this spring on the range. There's another one called 10K Solar, which is in Bloomington, Minnesota. They're manufacturing very efficient and uniquely designed panels. And also there's a new outfit in Baxter, Minnesota, that has developed a unique and, I think, patented inverter system that enables you to store some of the solar energy so you can use it when the sun's not shining. These are three perfect illustrations of how we're all going to be involved in Minnesota's energy enterprise and how we're going to have to pull together the teamwork and the sacrifice to help these industries build a new Minnesota energy profile.
I think one
of
the
exciting because it's taking place as we speak.
Sure. I think one of the questions that people might have is, you know, is it realistic to think that we, through efforts like you talked about, through the efforts of organizations like CCLEP up here, are we going to be able to take care of, you know, is the technology there to be able to take care of our energy needs as we look at some of the calamities and instabilities and unfortunately tragedies around the world affecting our other sources of energy?
Yeah, that's a great question. We're because we are still by far the largest energy consumer on a per capita basis, we're subject to all of those instabilities, the volatilities of all those markets, because we're the biggest single consumer. That said, we also built this nation, I believe, on teamwork and shared sacrifice. And I think kind of behind your question, Bob, is how is this going to affect us at a family level, individually, or socially and economically? It's going to have a significant effect. It's already taking that. The recession is becoming the Great Recession, I'm afraid.
Yeah.
But in that, we're revising our expectations and we're reassessing our assets. And I think in every community, this is what I notice as I travel around the community, and I have, you know, connections in more than 12 communities in these 9 counties. What I see is people are reevaluating American teamwork. And I taught economics for 30 years. And to my way of thinking, we became more and more individualized in the 80s and the 90s, and we hit that era which Alan Greenspan called the era of irrational exuberance, because we thought we could buy our future and happiness.
Mm-hmm.
Well, now we realize we can't buy happiness at all, and we're going to have to work with one another, which is what we did to build the republic into this fabulous country. So I think the good news is we're going to reevaluate our teamwork as Americans and as Minnesotans. Minnesota has always been a tough place to live, but resilient people moved here and built it out of their shared hope. I think that's what's going to happen. And it will be lower on the food chain of consumption.
Sure.
Because, you know, when oil prices spike, natural gas and coal will go up too, just because they all
have absolutely
things in common. So it's going to force us to live a lot leaner, but in the process of getting leaner, we're going to become healthier, more active, our families are going to become stronger, and our communities are going to become very tight-knit, partly because we're going to need each other again.
Sure. Bill Milstead is the head of the Northeast Minnesota Clean Energy Resource Team. He has been visiting with us from his office in Duluth. Bill, I want to thank you very much for... Oh, wait. Buck wants to say...
Oh, Bob, it's Middlefelt.
What did I just say?
Milstead.
Oh, Bill, I apologize.
Well, that's no problem. Why, it's almost as if the metaphor I was trying to create was the one that Buck has lived, where we're dangling from a very thin cord over a crevice in the glacier.
He knows that. He knows that one.
It's a great story.
Bill Middlefelt, I'm sorry. At any rate, we've been visiting with Bill from his office down in Duluth. I want to thank you so much for taking time on a Friday evening, Bill, to be with us, and look forward to seeing you when you're up here.
Thanks so much for the opportunity, Bob.